So you'll see it right down here. You see it says Psalm 55, 138. And if we miss it,
this morning, we're going to take a look at the entire chapter. But first, as we get started, I think as we look through these songs, one of the things that I've found as I've done some research and looked at some of the history behind these songs is a lot of songs, a lot of hymns, were written based on what I would consider difficult life experiences. Now, this song, I'll tell you a little bit about the story, and you'll recognize its kind of connection with Psalm 55. Now, I'm going to go ahead and give this preface. Psalm 55 is a difficult chapter. I joked a little bit with our men's Sunday school class this morning. This psalm was written by King David, and if you've ever read much of the Psalms, David goes from really, really high to really, really low. Have you ever read that? Well, this is one of David's really, really low psalms, where he's enduring some hardships, some difficulties, and really some loss of relationship as he encounters these things. So let me tell you, as we get started, a little bit of history behind the song, I'll Fly Away. Now, I'll go ahead and mention that, at least in the South, there's clapping and tambourines with this song, right? Anybody been a part of this song? It's usually accompanied by an echo, which my daughter didn't quite understand what may have been in that. As you read that, she was reading it, and I thought, well, I don't think I know this version. So I may have to work on that. But, there's a lot of joy. And this song, I'll Fly Away, I can remember growing up, was probably one of the loudest songs sang in our church, with tambourines and clapping and lots of noise. It was a little different this morning in our church. There are no tambourines, right? No tambourines? Now, you joke. Literally, there were people that would bring their own tambourines to the churches I grew up in. And they would even provide tambourines, so we won't put that in next year's budget. No church tambourines. But, this song, I'll Fly Away, it's really a promise, isn't it? That even in the midst of hardship, that we have something to look forward to. Now, this song, you'll probably recognize, it is not that old of a song. It was written in 1929. You'll recognize this song for more occasions than one. It's been recorded by numerous artists. It's probably one of the most prolific and well-known hymns in all of what we would consider our hymnal. Now, this song was written by a man named Albert Brumley. I'll put a picture of Al up on the screen, or actually Travis will. That's Mr. Brumley. Al Brumley was well known. He had written many, many hymns, but this one had, in fact, if you look through a hymnal, Brumley is credited to roughly about 100 different hymns. You'll recognize this song more so in maybe some modern country context. But Brumley wrote this song for a small church, Smyrna Baptist Church, which is halfway between Cortland and Middleton, Alabama. Anybody know where those places are? I don't have a clue where those places are. But Brumley originally performed this song as he sang a song in the middle of a cotton field. So I'm going to ask you to raise your hands. How many of you have ever stood in the middle of a cotton field?
South Carolina, they're still there.
Cotton fields are bad places. if you've ever been in a cotton field, most of you probably have some form of cotton on your body at this point. But cotton does not come off of the plant soft and cuddly. If you've ever been around cotton is probably one of the most painful and vile plants on the face of the planet. I just offended every cotton farmer on this continent. But the reality is cotton, if you've ever been around it, then you'll understand the difficulty of picking cotton. So the first time Brumley performed this song, he was standing in the middle of a field picking cotton, humming the song, If I Had the Wings of an Angel. Now, you can understand if you can picture him standing in the middle of a cotton field. Cotton is in a very, very prickly, I don't know what you'd call it.
What would you call it?
It's like a shell. It's almost like a shell. And as you pull it out, it scratches, it hurts. And you can imagine, as many of us have probably been in a situation similar to Brumley, in that moment, he desired to fly away. He desired to fly away. And so the song, I'll Fly Away, was originally performed in the middle of a cotton field and then later was sung in Smyrna Baptist Church. Quickly following that, the song became well known. It was produced. Brumley he married his wife, Goldie. She encouraged him to produce the song. And now we have the song, I'll Fly Away. But the premise behind the song I'll Fly Away, this well-known hymn, a hymn of hope, a hymn of connection, a hymn of grace, really comes a difficult story. Psalm chapter 55 begins to describe for us a heartbroken David. A David in a situation that had been very close to his heart, but now he is enduring hardship, loss, and brokenness. Now, psychologists talk about this phenomenon called fight or flight. How many of us are familiar with fight or flight? All of us have probably heard it at some point in time. You'll recognize that each of us have different responses. There are some of us, when we encounter hardship or challenge, whether someone comes at us, if they're going to attack us, whatever that might be, it's a natural body reaction. It's not something you have to decide, okay, I'm going to fight now. It happens naturally. Our blood pressure rises, our adrenaline starts pumping. And then there are others of us that, as soon as that happens, we don't decide to fight, we decide to do what? To flight. To run away. Now, all of us have different opinions on how that will work. Some of us will stand there if we're encountering danger, and we will determine that we will fight. And then there are those of us that, as soon as we encounter any type of resistance, we turn and run. Now, it's interesting as we look at King David's response through Psalm 55 as we begin to hear kind of both sides of the story. Now, again, this is not a theologically sound statement, and I probably shouldn't make it. But if you look at King David, sometimes he's a little bit bipolar. King David kind of comes and goes in the midst of these feelings. So he's talking about he's ready to fight, but then in the same way, he's talking about he's ready to run. Now, what would bring David into a situation where he would endure both emotions? If your Bible, like mine, has titles, my title for Psalm 55 says, Betrayal by a Friend. Betrayal by a Friend. You see, as we read through this psalm, what we'll begin to find is that the psalmist, traditionally known as King David, had endured great loss. Not just based on his kingdom, not just an attack that had come on Jerusalem, but he had lost a friend. More so than just losing a friend, his friend had turned, abandoned, and then stabbed him in the back. You see, King David, as we sing these words, I'll fly away, the verses that Brumley founded this hymn on, is really a verse of distress. A verse in a moment in time in David's life to where he is heartbroken, where he has no one else to turn to. So let's begin this morning by looking at David's complaint. Psalm chapter 55, verses 1 through 8 tell us this. God, listen to my prayer, and do not hide from my plea for help. Pay attention to me and answer me. I am restless and in turmoil with my complaint. Because of the enemy's words, because of the pressure of the wicked. For they bring down distress on me and harass me in anger. My heart shudders within me. Terrors of death sweep over me. Fear and trembling grip me. Horror has overwhelmed me. I said, if only I had wings like a dove, I would fly away and find rest. How far away I would flee. I would stay away in the wilderness. I would hurry to my shelter from the raging wind and store. You see, this prayer is reminiscent to Psalm chapter 54, verse 2. It says, give me your ear, O God. This plea that in the midst of David's distress, he just is asking for God to hear. Now, I think for all of us, sometimes as we sing these songs, as we read these verses, we can just kind of separate ourselves in a moment. But all of us have been in a time and place in our lives to where we just said, God, do you even hear me? Do you even hear me? If you look at David's words, I think that's really at the heart of what he's saying. He says, God, listen to my prayer. Don't hide from my plea for help. Pay attention to me and answer me. You see, this picture is a picture of oppression. David's response to the turmoil in which he is struggling with, first and foremost, we don't want to move beyond it. David's response to the struggle is to do what? It's to cry out to God. It's to cry out to God. You see, I think so often in the midst of our complaining, you know, how many of us have ever complained in the last 5 minutes? Yeah, some of you have. You know, as we complain, so often we complain to the wrong people, don't we? You can ask my wife. You know, so often I may endure something and I'll have this hardship, and well, because my wife loves me, she listens to me. But, you know, my wife is a person that I know loves and cares for me. But in all reality, who should I be going to first? I should be going to the one who knows. I should be going to God. You see, David's response, even though we can find some turmoil and we can struggle with this picture that he has, he goes to God first. You see, he's so brokenhearted that the relationships around him have fallen apart. And he says, attend to me, hear my voice, answer me. You see, David is not only just wanting to complain to God. What else is he wanting to do? He's wanting to hear from God. You see, now there's the other side of a complaint, isn't there? How many of you just have liked to complain? Well, maybe I shouldn't ask that question. That could be really dangerous. You know, most of us, we like the idea of complaining, but a lot of times we don't like the response from that complaint, do we? You know, like a child, if they come and they complain and you provide for them an answer, sometimes they don't really want the answer, they just want to be heard. You know, sometimes I think in our faith, we just kind of like to complain a little bit, and we don't really want to hear God's response. But you see, David here, he's saying, God, listen to me, give ear to me, respond to me, so that he can know which direction to go. Now, verse 2, I think, is very reminiscent, I think, for all of us as we look in our lives, this picture. It says, I am restless and in turmoil with my complaint, because of the empty words and because of the pressure of the wicked. For they bring down disaster on me and harass me in anger. You see, David expresses throughout these verses, verses 5 through 7, this picture of a desire to just run away, to just get away from what's happening, to get away from what he is enduring. And as we'll talk about here in just a few minutes, the hurt didn't come from far away. You see, David at this point in time would have been well-versed. He would have been a warrior. Most of us would know King David based on what events in his life. David and Goliath, not a little guy. David defeated Goliath. We wouldn't look at David and we wouldn't say that David is someone to run away from a fight. In fact, what did David do as he walked up to a giant? Picked up a little rock and did what? He defeated a giant. But you see, David finds himself broken. He finds himself in a place yearning to run away. We see this throughout the Bible. Look at Jeremiah chapter 48, verse 9 and verse 28. You see, you see these pictures, words like, give wings to Moab that she may flee and get away. You who dwell in Moab, leave the cities and dwell in the rock, and be like a dove which makes her nest in the sides of the cave's mouth. See, some would interpret this picture that David is just seeking the wilderness. He's just looking for a place to run. Have you ever been in a situation in your life to where you have reached a point that all you can think is, I've just got to get out. I've just got to flee. You see, David, he was so broken by the circumstances that surrounded him that he didn't know where else to turn. He didn't know where else to fight. All he asked was a place to run to. You see, now these verses, we look at verse 6 specifically based around the hymn that we just sung. If only I had wings like a dove, I would fly away and find one and find rest. How far away I would flee. I would stay in the wilderness. I would hurry to my shelter, the raging wind and the storm. You see, Jesus understood what it meant to be in the midst of turmoil. Jesus understood in moments such as Mark chapter 14, verse 36. He says, Father, take this cup from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. You see, Jesus, so often we see as a paramount character who not just was God in the flesh, but was beyond feeling. But we see throughout Scripture that Jesus endured hardship. Now, if you think about what had just occurred here before Mark chapter 14, Jesus had just been denied, right? Jesus had been denied, and Jesus told them that they would do it. Jesus wasn't just denied by some guy on the street. In fact, Jesus had been denied by one of his closest friends. Both Judas and Peter had walked with Jesus. They had lived with Jesus. They had ate with Jesus. And in this moment, he is so broken that he says, "Father, if it's your will, take this cup from me." But there's a difference, isn't there? There's a difference often in our response. Whenever we encounter hardship, we don't say, "Whatever your will is, though, God, I'm willing to do it." You see, David here in these verses, these first eight verses, makes an important recognition for us. That for us, when we talk about, "I'll fly away," we just think, "I'll just run away as far as I possibly can and not deal with it." But what David is saying is, "I'm going to run to a place of shelter." Now, we'll see through these next verses that David clearly understands the picture of where his shelter comes from. If you remember these beginning verses, that David cried out to God, that his first response was to turn to him as he encountered this hardship. What's our first response? Do we just complain, or do we listen to what God has in store? You see, now as we transition into verses 9 through 15, what we begin to find is kind of David's shift, if you will. So David, if you remember, he just said, "God, just get me out of here. If I had wings like a dove, I'd fly away and I would rest in you." But now David kind of transitions. He brings about a call for judgment in verses 9 through 15. Let me read those for us this morning. It says, "Lord, confuse and confound their speech. For I see violence and strife in the city. Day and night they make the rounds on its wall. Crime and trouble are within it. Destruction is inside it. Oppression and deceit never leave its marketplace. Now, it is not an enemy who insults me. Otherwise, I could bear it. It is not a foe who rises up against me. Otherwise, I could hide from him. But it is you, a man who is my peer, my companion and good friend. We used to have close fellowship. We walked with the crowd in the house of God. Let death take them by surprise. Let them go up into Sheol alive, because evil is in their homes and within them." That's pretty rough, isn't it? You see, David, as he came before God, he identified the struggle. He told him what was happening. And as David breaks down for us this call for judgment in these people's lives, he makes an important distinction, doesn't he? See, I think so often in human relationships, we don't value one another to the degree that I think we should. Well, we don't value our friendships to the degree that we should. And David, as he makes this call for judgment, he outlines, verses 9 through 11 really give us a difficult picture. He says, "Lord, confuse and confound their speech, for I see evil in the city, that they bring trouble within the markets. There's destruction incited." But David says, if it had come from further out, it wouldn't hurt as badly. Now, all of us have been in relationships like that out. It can be easily said that those who are closest to us can hurt us the most. Those who are closest to us, I think oftentimes we struggle to allow people into our lives because of fear. You see, King David, as he writes this psalm, he gives us a new picture for what grace truly is. You see, David here describes his brokenheartedness. He says, "Now if it was an enemy who insults me, otherwise I could bear it. If it was a foe who rises up against me, otherwise I could hide from him. But it is you, a man who is my peer, my companion, and good friend." See, church, I think so often those brokenness of relationships, that break, that tear in those close relationships often causes us to just want to run away, to just want to leave and abandon all of those things. But you see, what David didn't quite grasp in the midst of this, I think for us, it would be hard to think about David's level of vindictiveness. But in light of the gospel, there are two different ideas. First off, David needs to direct his actions to deal with the political situation he's facing. Second, we all deserve the reality of the curse in our lives. You see, for all of us, we have both been the friend who has been offended. We've also been the one who has done the offending. See, I think as we reflect on King David and we hear the brokenheartedness, we have to remember the picture of grace. The picture of grace that we have been forgiven much. I think there's also a warning in these verses. Not to abandon relationships, but to invest in God-type relationships, in those ones that are built on a foundation of Christ, the hope of the gospel. You see, Jesus' love changes those things. The love of Christ changes how we relate to one another. And church, as the church, as a body of believers, we should not be the friends who are doing the offending. Be careful how we relate to one another. Be careful what you say about someone else. Be careful about how you relate in the midst of those relationships. See, because in the midst of those things, we have an opportunity to share the hope of Christ. But so often, we can quickly turn into those friends who misuse, who break trust, who destroy and tear down relationships rather than build up. You see, David here has this desire to fly away. We remember that all of us deserve condemnation. But through the grace of Christ, we have been forgiven. And so as we transition this morning, David begins to make a confession a little bit further in these verses, starting in verse 16 through 19. He makes a confession about his own heart, about what's occurring in his own life. He changes from his complaint about his friends to a confession about his need. Verses 16 through 19 tell us this. But I call to you, God, and the Lord will save me. I complain and groan morning and night, and he hears my voice. Though many are against me, he will redeem me from my battle unharmed. God, the one enthroned from long ago, will hear and will humiliate them because they do not change and do not fear God. You see, David had outlined all of these sins and all of these things that they had done to him. But even in the midst of that, you hear in those final verses that they had an opportunity to change. If you look there in verse 19, it says, God is the one enthroned from long ago. He will hear and humiliate them because they do not change and they do not fear God. You see, even though David is in the midst of this hardship, even though he has this desire to fly, to flee, to run, he still has a desire that his friends would come to know, that they would come into this fear of God, this relationship with God. But he makes this proclamation about who God is in his life. First off, we see in verse 16, he says that, but I call to God, the Lord will save me. You see that foundation of recognizing where our salvation comes from, where our hope resides. I will complain and groan morning, night, noon, and night, and he will hear my voice. Though many are against me, he will redeem me from my battle unharmed. See, church, that's the hope that we have in God. That's the hope that we have even in the midst of chaos, even when our friends turn their back on us, even when enemies attack, even when we feel that we are at the lowest of the low, we can cling to the hope that we have in our Savior. You see, in David's life, he says, but I call to God. I have to ask you the question this morning. Who are you calling upon? Where is your strength found? Where is your hope residing? You see, I think so often we are taken off guard because our hope resides in the wrong thing. Our battle is being fought not by God, but by ourselves. And that's why David makes the statement in verse 19, God, the one enthroned from long ago. This statement is a statement about God as king and judge eternally. That it wasn't just a moment that he became this, but that God has always been God. You see, as we look at this picture, as it continues through these verses, there's this desire for change. You know, the gospel changes us, church. The truth of what David is describing here changes us. No matter where we've been, no matter what we've done, no matter what has happened in our friendships, our relationships, we have the chance to change. Whether we've been the one offending or we've been the one offended, we have the opportunity to show the hope that David describes here in these verses. See, we go back to the song, I'll Fly Away. If we think about Brumley standing in this cotton field in a very probably dismal moment where he just wanted something better. See, I think in life we have to come to a realization that God has already given us something better. We have to make the decision. We have to follow God. We have to fear him in obedience, knowing the truth that we hear and study and have through his word. David transitions once again, and as I mentioned, David kind of goes back and forth through this chapter. We heard just a moment ago how he's trusting in God. He says, but I'll call to God, and the Lord will save me. He comes back to this struggle, and we'll call it a further complaint, in verses 20 through 22. It says, my friend acts violently against those at peace with him. He violates his covenant. His buttery words are smooth, but war is in his heart. His words are softer than oil, but they are drawn swords. Now, I just wanted to write, as I thought through the sermon this week, don't be those people. Like, can I just say that about them? Just don't be those people. I mean, if you listen to the words that David just described, I mean, he described a really terrible person, didn't he? Let me read them to you, verses 20 and 21. It says, my friend acts violently at peace against those at peace with him. He violates his covenant. His words are smooth, but in his heart is war. His words are softer than oil, but they are drawn swords. I mean, those are difficult, difficult accusations. You see, David experienced firsthand probably what many of us have experienced. Someone who says one thing but acts differently, don't they? Someone, we call them a backstabber. We call them two-faced. Whose words are buttery smooth. Who kind of dress you up and they kind of make you feel a little weird. But in the end, what do? They turn around and they stab you in the back. His buttery words are smooth, but war is in his heart. His words are softer than oil, but they are drawn swords. I think most of us would probably ascribe to this individual the term hypocrite. The term hypocrite. And as I mentioned, don't be that kind of person. You know, we talk about in our home a lot, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And it's this whole idea here as David continues this complaint, he goes a little bit further into what had happened. Now, historically, what began to happen because of this friend's relationship, there was an attack on Jerusalem. It wasn't just like they weren't friends on Facebook anymore. All right, there was literal destruction happening within the city walls because of the deceit and lies from this friend. So David's not just hanging out in his house. David is literally afraid for his life because of the lies and deception from this assumed friend. So, church, let me encourage you with this. Be careful with your words. Friendships are a valuable thing. God has created us. He existed in relationship with God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. He gave us relationships, not only in marriage, but also in friends. Be careful how we relate to one another. Be careful what we say and how we encourage. And rather than tearing down, build up. You see, David transitions away as he gives light to the structure, the difficulty of his friend. In verse 22, you see, no matter what we may endure, and I think the words of Brumley's song, I'll Fly Away, as we talk about that, that the phrase that always kind of caught me was that I'll fly, I'm going to get it wrong, from fly like a bird from prison bars above. Right? Is that wrong? Close. That's right, like a bird from prison bars have flown. I always thought that was an interesting idea, that he's literally kind of bailing out of jail. But, you know, I think there's a struggle here. There's a trap, if you will, to where they are contained. And for all of us, I think, as we look at David's words, there's this restraint that he has to where he feels burden, where he feels as if there's no hope. But verse 22 changes the picture. And as we sang the song, I'll Fly Away, it tells us of a future glory, a hope that we have in eternity. Verse 22 says, cast your burdens on the Lord, and he will sustain you. He will never allow the righteous to be shaken. See, this confession of David should be the confession of our hearts. You know, we talked a couple of weeks ago about Jesus as he says, cast your burdens on me. Take up my yoke, because my burden is light and my yoke is easy. You see, David here makes this statement for us centuries later. Cast your burdens on the Lord, and he will sustain you. Some of us are pretty strong, aren't we?
Maybe some of you, none of you probably.
Travis is strong, not older. different kind of strong. You know, strength can come to an end, can't it? You know, it's real bad. strength comes to an end. Human strength will always come to a place to where it fails. But there's a strength that comes from God that doesn't fail, that doesn't end. That will always endure. See, I think David, as we read through Psalm chapter 55, came to a place to where he ran out of strength. Maybe as Brumley stood in the midst of a cotton field, in case you're wondering, they grow cotton in places that it's hot and nasty. Do you know where cotton grows the best?
South Carolina.
Sand. It grows in sand. Do you know what else lives in sand? Rattlesnakes, scorpions, like not good stuff. And if we can imagine maybe Brumley for a moment as he stands in this dismal moment just saying, God, just get me out of here. If I could fly away, I would. Maybe his strength had come to an end. My grandfather grew up in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and he would tell stories about picking cotton until his fingers bled. If you look at my grandfather's fingers, I mean, they are huge and gnarly, and he can't bend them anymore. And that's how his family survived, was picking cotton. You know, I think the pain and struggle of that imagery, I think as Brumley wrote those words, I'll fly away, is similar to David as he makes his proclamation, if I had wings as a dove, I would leave. But the resolution that King David comes to says, cast your burdens on the Lord and he will sustain you. He will never allow the righteous to be shaken. See, church, the only hope that we have in this world is God. The only hope that we have in this world is God. We will come to a place where we are broken. We will come to a place where we are shattered. We will come to a place where we no longer have strength. That's why David makes this claim. He says, cast your burdens on the Lord. You see, all of us have burdens. All of us have struggles. I think sometimes we have a difficult time releasing those things. You know, we've talked about this idea before that sometimes when we talk about casting our burdens on the Lord, have you ever cast a net before or cast a fishing pole? Do you chunk the whole thing in the water? Do you? Because if you do, you're doing it wrong. No, you hold on, don't you? See, I think sometimes we talk about casting our burdens on the Lord. Sometimes we think about it more like a net or a fishing pole, to where we throw it out, but we've still got the strength. And we say, okay, God, you take this for a little bit, but when I'm ready, I've still got a hold of it. See, we don't ever just truly let go. We don't turn over our burdens to the Lord, but rather we seek to carry them ourselves. See, verse 23, as David concludes this psalm, says this, God, you will bring them down to the pit of destruction. Men of bloodshed and treachery will not live out half their days, but I will trust in you. See, David makes a confession at the very end of this psalm. Even though he's been hurt, even though he's been betrayed, even though he's been in the midst of the greatest difficulty that maybe he encounters in his entire life, he makes a confession, says, but I will trust in you. So, church, Who do you trust in this morning? Who is carrying your burdens? Are you seeking to just run away, to just fly away? Or are you finding residence and strength in the arms of the Lord? See, who do you place your trust in? Because that's going to determine how you weather the storms of life. That's going to determine how you relate to one another. That's going to determine the depth and level of your friendship, how you're going to carry and build up rather than tear down and destroy. Who's your trust in this morning? I'll be here as the worship team.
Sorry,
I'm just kind of looking bad.
I know I'm getting Did you have fun yesterday, Danny?
Yeah.
Yeah.